even though I couldn't communicate all that well, I mean, it was as if I was family with all of them. And that was a real shift in my career. And it was, you know, wildly impactful in terms of the way that we do business and everything else. And it helped me understand, I guess, kind of what I'd been missing.
This is the Square One Show. Today, we want to introduce you to Ryan Rogar. He's a serial entrepreneur, award-winning creative director, podcaster, author, and business owner specializing in building end-to-end authentic relationships for his clients. We had a great conversation, and we really think you're going to find this engaging. Just hearing his stories, his thoughts on what's most important and why. Here's our interview with Ryan. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
Oh, I am so good. How are you guys today?
I am good. I have my husband Dave here with me as well.
Hello.
Excellent. Hey, nice meeting you all.
Yeah, definitely. So, Ryan, you're in Salt Lake City. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. I'm based in Salt Lake City, and then I split my time with our remote office in Barcelona, Spain. So I spend a lot of time in Spain, and then I'm here the rest of the time.
Nice. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. Amazing.
Yeah. Are you doing that like in the middle of winter or...
I wish it was so scheduled. It's really just when work calls and there's a reason to head over there. But you know, it's kind of all times of the year. Their winters aren't as harsh as they are here in Utah. So I appreciate the weather over there.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah. Well, so give us a little bit of a background on what exactly you're the CEO and founder of a couple companies, but I think your main one is it R2MG?
Yeah.
So what exactly is that and what do you guys do?
Yeah. So R2 is a graphic design, marketing company, creative firm. We do web design, graphic design, photography, marketing, digital marketing, all that good stuff. And basically we do it from our central location here in Salt Lake City. And then we also work, as I mentioned, over in Spain. So we have a small office over in Spain. And so, but yeah, we work for a number of big multinational and global clients doing graphic design and different things like that, advertising, marketing, that sort of thing. And then, so that's kind of it.
Awesome. So when you're growing, are you from Salt Lake City originally?
No, I'm from Pocatello, Idaho, which is it's 2 hours north of Salt Lake. So I've basically been in Idaho most of my life. We moved to Salt Lake 6 years ago. I took a job at an ad agency. So my business has always been sort of a side hustle. Well, until recent years, it's been sort of the side hustle or the freelance biz that I was doing on the side while I worked for different groups. And for the longest time, I was calling myself a creative agency, but in Pocatello, Idaho, there's very few of them. There was one. So needless to say, I had very little experience in agency despite calling myself one. About it's been closer to 8 years ago now, I sent out just a bulk email to all the agencies I could come up with in Boise, Idaho and Salt Lake City, just because those are the two biggest markets near me. And just basically offered a month of my design time for free in exchange for the opportunity to be a fly on the wall somewhere and just learn a little bit about the agency business. And so of all the people I reached out to, there's maybe 25 or 30 different agencies. We had one bite. It's an agency called Thomas Arts here in Salt Lake City and actually in Farmington, Utah, but it's a suburb of Salt Lake. And they were open to the idea. So I came down, I worked with them for a month. And then at the end of my month, we sort of parted ways and stayed in touch, though. We had a really good experience and built up kind of a nice rapport. And 2 years later, they called me up, said, hey, we've got a creative director spot that we need to fill. Would you be interested in coming down? And at the time, I was freelancing, but we just had a new baby. And it was time to hulk up a little bit on the income. And so they gave me a great opportunity, and we moved to Salt Lake.
That's awesome.
But now you're working on your own company, right?
Yep, that's so correct.
At what point did you decide to break away from that and decide that, okay, I don't want to be working for anyone else. I want to be working for myself. What did that transition look like?
Well, so there's been a number of iterations of this. It's come and gone. But basically, right out of college, I was working for a New York Times bestselling publisher who happened to be in Pocatello. And I worked for them as a graphic designer, but I also ran his mail order business and all this other stuff and developed a lot of skills around marketing and advertising that were sort of outside of my typical design wheelhouse because my trade is, or my expertise is graphic design, or that's my background anyway. And so, so I learned a lot of things while working for him. And during the time I worked for him, there's about 5 years there I worked for him. I started doing a little bit of side work, started developing a little bit of a side hustle and picking up clients over the internet. So as I did that and I started to build a little bit of clientele, and continued, you know, polishing my skills while working for this publisher, eventually we hit a point where there was a layoff. And, you know, we were a very small publishing house. There was only three of us working there. And so, but I was laid off. I was one of the, you know, three of us that was laid off. And at that point, sort of went out on my own. So I was sort of nudged into it. I've always been a little bit, I don't know, not super risk taking. And so I probably wouldn't have made this step without that nudge. But when I landed, or when I, you know, sort of got my head above water and realized, okay, this is my new reality, I found that, you know, I had plenty of clients sort of keep my life afloat. You know, we had a young baby at the time and had just bought a house and just been married, all this stuff. And so, you know, I had real life grown up expenses at that point. You know, but I found that my freelance clients were enough to sort of support that life. And so that sort of kickstarted me into freelance, or into a, you know, sort of real life business, I guess. So as we went on, you know, I mean, it was just a one-man operation for a long time. And so I did that for about 5 years, at which point I reached out to Thomas Arts, and that's how that began. But we, even when I came to work for the agency down here in Salt Lake, I still ran my business on the side. We still had developed some clientele, and we had, you know, this, you know, good rapport with people. But at that point, I had to bring on some additional resources to help me out, because I was working for the agency full time. And then running my business basically from 7 at night to 2 in the morning, 5 days a week. And so, so we did that for 5 years. After 5 years, I was laid off at Thomas Arts. They, you know, lost a client, and unfortunately I was part of the cut. And so again, laid off, pushed back into my own business. And, I had built up enough rapport and enough clientele that I was able to support that. So there it goes. And so, and even to this day, I mean, like, I've got a project for Thomas Arts right now. Like, we've always maintained a great relationship. We still do a lot of contract work for them as a freelancer and everything. We have a really great relationship. So it's been great. Despite working for myself, they've always been really supportive of me and what I'm doing. So they've been a great company and great allies for me.
That's awesome. And you've got a couple other companies too, I think I read about, and you also have a podcast, and I was listening to one of your episodes and you described yourself as an introvert. So I'm curious how you managed to make these connections, and kind of seems like you were really proactive in going after some of these connections and relationships. Like, how do you manage that as an introvert?
Well, it's interesting. You know, it's one of these things that I'm trying to sort of even come to terms with on my own, is every time I tell somebody I'm an introvert, I always get that sort of, huh, kind of look. And, you know, and it is the way that I saw myself. And actually, for a large portion of my 20s, basically my whole 20s, I was nose down. You know, after being laid off by the book publisher, I basically, you know, I got a little office space. I started working on my own clients. In an effort to, you know, do what I thought was best for my family, I was working my butt off, you know, 15 hours a day, 14 hours a day, all day cranking, sitting in this office by myself. And meanwhile, during that period of time, all my sort of relationships and friendships, you know, everybody went on and started lives and got married and went to college and did whatever. And meanwhile, I was just sitting nose down in my office. It actually wasn't until years later, actually, right after we moved to Utah, when I had the opportunity to meet who is now my partner in Barcelona, that I had the opportunity to go to Spain. And that sort of helped me realize what I'd been missing out on. And so while I felt really good, and like I was doing all this service for my family to, you know, by killing myself and working all these crazy hours to try and, you know, make as much money as I could, all these like sort of relationships and everything had slipped away. And I didn't even realize that that was a problem until actually my first trip to Spain, shortly after brokering our deal with my now partner. I went over to Spain and, you know, I didn't speak a lick of Spanish or anything. And I was immediately sort of sucked into their familial groups and social groups and everything. And even though I couldn't communicate all that well, I mean, it was as if I was family with all of them. And that was a real shift in my career. And it was, you know, wildly impactful in terms of the way that we do business and everything else. And it helped me understand, I guess, kind of what I'd been missing. You know, most people, when they go to Spain for the first time, come back raving about the party scene, you know, whatever it is. But for me, it was really the importance that Spanish people put on personal relationships. And that connection or having that new understanding or shifting my dichotomy to where I now believed in the sort of in the importance of relationships pushed me out to where I felt, you know, more comfortable or more interested in going out and trying to seek new relationships. As a result of doing all this new relationship development, I started to become much more comfortable in a room talking to other people, things like that. And my sort of introversion has begun to slip because of that. In fact, just 2 years ago, I had come off a big consulting relationship with Thomas Arts, with my former agency. I was out in Boston working for them for about 4 months and came back and I worked the, you know, another 6 months or so for them on the same client here from Salt Lake. And at the end of that term, you know, it was for a health insurer, and at the, you know, their health insurance sort of cycle peaks and ends around November. And so when November came around and they did another round of layoffs, they laid me off again as a consultant. And at that point, my wife was like, okay, we're done with this. She's like, no more going to work at agency. Yeah, she was so tired of our livelihood hinging on some agency's relationships or whatever.
That's good, yeah.
And basically said, here's the deal. Either commit full time to this business and make this business stand alone and make this our future, or quit it completely and go find another job. Like, this is what you've got to do. You've got to find some stability for us. We've got two boys at this point. You know, house payments, car payments, all the usual stuff. And it's important that we have some sort of some stability. So I sort of went back into that bag of tricks that I had. The thing that inspired me or gave me the thought to reach out to all these agencies for free back, you know, so many years ago. Mm-hmm. I did a new version of that where I basically went out on LinkedIn and I reached out to every CEO, CMO, C-whatever-o I could get my hands on. And basically went to them without solicitation. I wasn't trying to sell them anything or bring them into our design business or anything. It was just, I need help becoming a business person. You know, I've been leading creative teams for a long time. I know how to do like management and design and everything in the context of an agency. But in terms of being a real live business person, I didn't see myself that way. Right. And what I discovered, which was kind of interesting, and so taking the really long way back to your question, basically what I realized is after meeting all these CEOs and sitting down and seeing how they carried themselves and how willing they were to share and help and talk and discuss, it really sort of allowed me to turn another corner in terms of sort of what I've perceived as my introversion. And I basically learned that I would much rather be speaking to these guys and out trying to foster relationships with these people than I would like to be sitting behind the computer doing work. And so it was a big shift for me because up to that point, my entire career had been sitting behind the computer working on design projects.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you know, just two years ago and some change at that point, it became clear to me that actually what I really want to do is get out and build relationships. Hmm. And so while I still sort of see myself as a insecure introvert, I definitely get accused of lying on that front a lot now. So,
but do you think that a lot, maybe it was more insecurity than introversion? Because it sounds like maybe it was more of a fear of that you didn't have what it took, or you weren't at that level that they were at. But then as you got to know them in relationship, you start to see, well, they're just like me. They have the same issues that you have.
Yeah. I think there's definitely something to that. It's not real uncommon for designer types to be a little bit introverted and like to sit behind their computer and do their work and just kind of crank away. You know, if you're working a lot with creative people, you know, designers and art directors and people like that, you know, to find people who are also, you know, great at design and good with people, that's kind of a good, you know, a difficult blend. So I think that there's some bit of just sort of my personality as a designer, as an art guy, that I was sort of naturally inclined to work on my own.
Right.
But to your point, I don't think now sort of in retrospect, it feels a little less like an introversion and it's more like a hyper focus on what I'm doing, right? It was an attention to detail. It was all this other things that were driving that thing. And just as a side effect or as a result, I wasn't being very social. But it didn't have that much to do with me being afraid of being social as much as it had to do with, I wasn't making time for it or it wasn't as big a priority to me.
Right.
And to your other point about, you know, maybe finding a little more common ground as I'm meeting these guys who I perceived as very high level. And not to say that they're not, but I mean, you know, definitely they, you know, are also just human beings, you know, and we're all kind of the same and we all have our own struggles and I might have things they don't have and vice versa, you know, and it did kind of level the playing field. It made it much easier for me as an aspiring business person to stop keeping these guys up on like a pedestal and rather see them as peers that we could work together and learn from.
Yeah.
So I want to dive back, kind of go back a little bit. You talked about the importance of relationships and you went to Spain and that totally changed your mindset of what that looks like. So now that you're, what, a few years into this now?
Yeah, we've been six years in Spain now.
6 years in Spain. So coming back, what does that look like on a daily basis with how much time you spend work compared to how much time you're spending with family? And how do you find that balance? What does that balance look like for you?
You know, it's funny. I was just talking to my wife about this morning. You guys had sent over some notes that one of the things you wanted to talk about a little bit was this balance and how that works. And I was putting a little thought to it and I was trying to decide, you know, do I get anywhere near achieving this work-life balance? You know, obviously a version of me in the past when I was working in agency 8 to 5 and then my business 7 to 2 in the morning, you know, didn't allow a lot of time for family. Now, we still traveled on the weekends. We still did things together and everything. And I worked from home largely. So I was around, but, you know, obviously I was busy and it wasn't maybe as balanced as you would hope for. Nowadays, the way things seem to go, especially in the summer, is I actually have too much life and not enough business. So, I mean, I don't know if I kind of ebb and flow a little bit and that's how I cope with it. But I think striking that balance is a really difficult thing to do, you know, because it really depends what your balance is. You know, for me, when I go to work, I don't feel like I'm working. I really enjoy what I'm doing. And it's the type of thing that I really, I don't know, sort of, for me, it's not a stretch or it's not difficult to do this. So I'm not feeling the burden of somebody that maybe has to go work at a factory or do a job that they hate or whatever it is. And so I guess for that, I'm grateful, but it does make it, I guess, kind of blurry to see where the work and the life part is. Mm-hmm. Now, I definitely, and maybe it's just age, and I definitely am having more thoughts about legacy and my kids growing up and stuff like that than I did even 5 years ago, which I assume is just me getting old. but I think that maturity or whatever is allowing me to balance out a lot more than I used to. And so, but I don't know if I would have gotten to this stage of balance if I hadn't sort of grounded out first.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's interesting. You're talking about not having enough work almost. And it's just interesting because a lot of people, I think a lot of our listeners and a lot of people today, their aspirations are less work and more play. And yet we find a lot of purpose in work, or we can. And I think maybe the difference is it's not purposeless work, but if we have purpose in our work, like you said, it doesn't feel like work. So I don't think the goal should necessarily be to avoid work. It's finding purpose. And for you, it sounds like once you found that purpose is in the relationships and developing those, you even said that's what helped you with your overcoming your introversion and some of those insecurities. So I think,
yeah, no, it's so true. And I mean, right after coming back from Spain the first time, we immediately started putting on our website that we're in the relationship business.
Yeah.
It took me about 3 or 4 years to really understand what that even meant. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I started tiptoeing around that idea, right? You know, like I could recognize the fact that, you know, advertising or marketing and design and all the services that we provide are, you know, aspects of relationship development.
Right.
None of those things work without good customer relationships, but they also don't work with, you know, without end user relationships. Like we sort of look at the spectrum, you know, from top management inside a company all the way down to end user and sort of look at all the different relationships along the way. Mm-hmm. And as I said, in terms of trying to figure out what this idea of being in the relationship business even means, and in hopes of trying to be able to articulate it, that's one of the things that we sort of landed on was this idea that, you know, relationships are basically the fuel that drives the machine. Mm-hmm. You know, we may not always think about it, but I mean, it is, it's how an end user perceives your business, or it's, you know, the relationship that you have with your employees, for example, or, you know, anywhere in between, you know, from literally top management to end consumer, there are these little relationships and any sticking points along the way can cause issues. And so we always use the example. We had a client who came to us and they were like, hey, man, we need a new website. This is our thing. We need a new website. And back in those days, I was quick to just take whatever project came along. So I didn't get real heavy into why they needed a new website. We just were like, sure thing, let's do it. And so we built out this new website for them. It was basically an e-commerce platform. We built this thing out, looked great, you know, it functioned awesome and did all the things they wanted it to do. Well, they, you know, started operating this website. It ran for a few months and God, there just was no bump in sales. There was no bump in anything. Like nothing got any better. And then, you know, come to realize or come to find out much later, but there was an issue where some of the customer service reps didn't like their internal manager. Oh. So even though our site was building more leads and generating more, you know, driving more traffic to them, those front end guys were having such a bad relationship with their supervisor or their internal person that they just weren't passing them along. They were just giving, you know, 50% effort instead of 100% effort or 80% effort.
Right.
And so, no, you know, so we were kind of hamstrung because here we are, we've done this website. We assure them it's going to work. It's going to do all this great stuff. And then something inside was actually the problem. And so now we have shifted our language a little bit, and we try to identify some of these kinds of problems early on. You know, it's difficult to find them. Obviously, it requires a certain amount of transparency within a company to get there. But we're much more critical of the why do you want a new website kind of question, because we may have been able to derive, you know, or at least hypothesize some kind of theory that would have led us to say, well, this isn't a website problem. This is a something else problem.
Right.
Had we asked the right questions. And so now we do that. And so, but, you know, at its core, those are relationships and how they're negatively or positively affecting the outcomes.
Right. And in some ways, I imagine, since you're focusing on the relationships, that's actually probably more work in some ways. Dealing with people and investing time into the relationship is a lot more than just, yeah, we'll take your money and make this website.
Yeah. It's true. It is. And it's a harder sell. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, obviously we're talking about things that are really ethereal and really, you know, subjective. You know, how do you know that my relationship is bad? You know, and most of us think all our relationships are hunky-dory, right? Like, we may not even realize there's issues. You know, most of us just sort of, you know, naturally assume things are going all right unless there's a real problem.
Right.
And so, you know, but by taking the little extra time and delving into some of these metrics and trying to take our work and actually put it against business objectives versus just, you know, taking that check.
Yeah.
We found that not only are we generating better results, and the engagements are a little bigger and they cost a little more and they take a little longer, but they are delivering more results.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of people in our industry, you know, design and web development and all these guys, digital marketing. There are a ton of people in this space that are just going to take that check. You, the client, know that you want a new website, so therefore I will make you one.
Yep.
This switch or whatever, where we're actually empathetic to our client and we actually care about what they're doing and why they think they need a website, and the discussion that ensues from that will help us make so many better informed decisions and allow us to actually create things that perform, that that it makes all the difference in the world. We can actually do fewer engagements that are more highly involved and create much better outcomes for our clients than we ever could just operating on their base assumptions.
So then it sounds like you probably have a lot of clients coming to you. Are there some clients where you say, you know what, we're just not a good fit? Because you can see that they're not in a relationship business and you can see it play out. Are there any instances where you say, this isn't going to work out?
Sure. Yeah. A big part of our sort of client acquisition process is that, I mean, basically if they don't buy into this premise, you know, if they don't see any value in relationships, then we are just taking their money. That feels to me a little bit scammy.
Yeah. So you tell them upfront, this is our process and this is what we're going to go through and kind of root out. And if you don't want to go through that process and really pay us to help you go through that process, we're probably not a good fit.
Yeah. And there's variation, right? I mean, most people will buy the premise that good relationships are better than bad relationships,
sure.
Right? I mean, most people will buy into it in its most core form, right?
Yeah.
And these big year-long engagements where we go in and we do focus groups and studies and all these things, like that version of our engagement, you know, we don't do a ton of those. Those require big, high-level companies, lots of money and lots of time and investment.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I mean, you know, we still have to keep the lights on around the house. So we do take other projects. But in terms of the type of people we work with, we generally interview our clients up front. So we sit down and sort of just do a little bit of a chemistry test, make sure we feel good, make sure they at least will go with us on our philosophy, even if they don't fully buy in, or even if they don't want to do, you know, a full heavy level engagement, at least they understand where we're coming from and the lens we're perceiving things through, so that as we make choices and we make decisions, they, I guess, have some background on why we're choosing what we're choosing. And that seems to, I mean, that will sort of satisfy, you know, our requirement that they sort of buy in on the philosophy. They don't necessarily have to pay for the whole philosophy.
Right.
And so, yeah. So, but it is, you know, I mean, generally, if you're coming to us, you're not coming to us you know, because we're just any other digital marketer, you know, the idea is that you've, you know, at least on some level agreed with this premise that we can develop better relationships. And by doing so, you'll do better in business.
Yeah.
And so, and it's funny because it seems very, you know, very rudimentary or like the most obvious thing in the world, but it is a departure in this space or in this industry, you know, that not everybody is thinking that way. Sure. A lot of people are more tactical. They're like, hey, you know, we build banner ads, so therefore I want to sell you banner ads.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. And a lot of people don't spend a lot of time doing this consultative bit of the business where we actually try and work on it. And we will commonly talk people out of what they come to us for.
You know,
they'll come to us and say, you know, hey, I need a new logo. And then we'll get into, well, why do you need a new logo? what makes you think you need a new logo? Well, you know, business isn't going that good. We, you know, Nike just came out with a new cool whatever, and we want to be cool like Nike, you know, or whatever. And you know, but that's not a good reason to do a new logo. You know, I mean, like we've got to sort of drill down into these topics. And so we'll have these longer form discussions before we actually put pen to paper and try and, you know, make sure we're not selling them something they don't need. You know, just about everybody could leverage more marketing or more advertising or more whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But we need to make sure that what we're doing or the tactics we choose are done so, you know, that we choose the right thing versus just doing what is their gut. Because, you know, especially things like logos, color palettes, things like that, like people get tired of stuff. You know, when you work in a brand all day, every day, you get tired of purple or whatever color is, you know, like, I mean, you know, you get that fatigue, but the rest of the world doesn't. Nobody else knows what's going on with you yet. You know, they're still trying to figure it out. And so we get a lot of people who are just fatigued with whatever their current thing is. And it's not really tied to some metric or, you know, there's not a real problem they're trying to
put
solve.
Put your finger on it. Yeah. So I want to talk real quick too. You have another business that you started recently, I think, is that right? With the whittling. Is that still something you're doing? Is that and that was with your wife as well?
Yeah. So whittle is an idea. Actually, it was born out of the conversations I was mentioning earlier, where I was going around and meeting all these CEO types. One of the guys I met, you know, he's a really well-known, you know, prominent investor, venture capitalist, you know, business guy here in Salt Lake City or in the Valley. And I was down there and I was talking to him. It was the first time I'd ever met him. And I was talking to him about, you know, what's the future of ad agencies look like and blah, blah, blah. And I could see his eyes just glazing over because he didn't know anything about the agency business. You know, he's an investor. He's a business guy. And, you know, he has no idea about this kind of thing. And so the first, so what I did is I just kind of flipped over my notebook and I always have like these sticky notes with just all these like ideas on them. And the first idea in the list was this thing, Whittle. And so I pitched it to him. Right away, he tried to offer me some money. We ended up not taking it just because I didn't know when we'd work on it, but he really liked the idea.
Right.
So he and I sort of started this relationship and we've stayed in contact. And most recently, me and my wife over the summer, my wife teaches school, so she was off for the summer. So we went to this thing. It's an e-commerce school in Lehi, Utah called Tangible. And this guy that I had met is named Scott Paul. Scott Paul is one of the founders. And so I saw this as an opportunity to A, work on this project under sort of the tutelage of him without having to take his money. B, I got to, you know, this was some way that I could kind of bring my wife into my world because she doesn't really have an understanding of what I do in terms of business or whatever. And it's really funny. I mean, even for me to articulate, it's tough, but like if you ask my mom or if you ask my wife or, you know, or ask my kids, like nobody knows what I do. Just, you know, for some reason people keep writing me checks, but that's it. And so, so I thought that that would be a cool opportunity. We had this business that I wanted to launch and, you know, this was a good opportunity to do it together. So we set this goal of trying to knock out this business, basically be launched in 10 weeks. Unfortunately, we hit some like logistics and legal documentation snags that have delayed us. In fact, I'm still waiting on stuff to come back. But nonetheless, we're going. And this Tangible school is about to kick off again. So we're going to go. Well, I'm going to go back because she's gone back to school. I'm going to go back for the next 10 weeks and we'll try and launch it again after this because I'll have all the documentation in order.
That's awesome.
So, but in theory, we want to be launched in time for the holidays. So that's the grand plan. But what it is, so to sort of answer what Whittle even is, is it's basically the way we pitch it anyways, it's the Dollar Shave Club of woodworking. And so basically in your first month, you receive a block of wood, a pocket knife, a sharpening stone, and a little paper insert we call the WOM or the Whittle of the Month. And it's got some design inspiration, safety tips, all that kind of stuff on it. And then each subsequent month, you receive another block of wood and another WOM. So you have new ideas every month and a new piece of wood. And so we started going down this path, but it's funny because it all circles back to this relationship stuff. So I have this theory, and I'm not alone in this, but one of the things that I work on or talk about is this idea that we've hit at sort of a technological saturation point where iPhones and things like that have sort of lost their novelty. And, you know, everything's become so commonplace now. And now we're kind of pushing back naturally and looking for tactile, you know, experiences. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing a rise in, you know, food movements, yeah, and craft beer and craft everything,
yep,
beard oil, all this kind of stuff. And it's all basically us pushing back on technology and looking for tactile relationships. And so back to the relationship idea, my thought or my theory behind Whittle is basically we need to step away from technology and re-engage in relationships, not just with, you know, other people like a traditional relationship, mm-hmm, but also with ourselves and also with things, you know, like a relationship with this block of wood in this case.
Yeah.
And so, and the idea is that you get to experience the satisfaction of having done something with your hands. You get to sit on your porch and whittle away for hours and spend that time with yourself and your own thoughts. And you do all that without your cell phone. You know, basically, mm-hmm, technology offered us kind of the promise of greater human relationship. Like, basically, that's the allure to Twitter and social media and stuff like that, is getting more and more human relationship. Mm-hmm. But the problem is it sort of misses the mark. You know, it doesn't really deliver on that idea. You know, you get to talk to other humans or whatever, but it's different than, yeah, sitting down and having coffee with somebody.
Right.
It's just a different thing. Mm-hmm. And so the idea behind Whittle really is more to do with this, you know, idea of developing relationships with self and things, and a lot less to do with the woodworking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so wood being just the modality, but relationships being the key.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that's kind of the business in a nutshell. Basically, the, you know, like I said, it hopefully will be launched in time for the holidays.
Yeah.
We want to try and launch mid-October. We just got all our wood back. We're waiting on knives, and then we'll be ready to be in business. Man, so
that's awesome. That's one of those ideas, right, that you're like, why didn't I think of that? That's amazing. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Well, and what I love about it too, you know, because it has this like deeper backstory,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and there's some fun, so there's some fun components to it too.
Sure.
Like, I mean, our wood comes from a little tiny family farm out in the middle of Wisconsin,
nice,
run by guys named Tim and Dale. Like, I mean, it couldn't be,
yeah,
more perfect, you know, like, I mean, it's exactly what you would want.
Oh, yeah.
It's the story.
And, yep.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
And you might have some ideas on how to market that. So that's good too.
Right, your marketing, yeah, experience, yeah, and design help.
Well, and see, but it's interesting too, though, because I'm notorious for starting ideas like this all the time. Like, I have, you know, these kinds of visions or these kinds of thoughts all the,
yeah,
time. I mean, you know, I've launched clothing companies. I've had all kinds of little side hustles over the years, mm-hmm, that have all been, you know, these things. But the one part that I haven't spent a lot of time in is actually developing product. You know, I'm all day long creating new things, you know, building digital assets and things for people, but I don't often delve into real products.
Right.
Where we have to source materials, produce materials, you know, we'll have to pack and ship, we'll have, yeah, to do all this. So it's kind of an exciting adventure for me because it's a little bit of, you know, for me too, it's, you know, a tactile thing.
Yeah.
It's taking me out of my computer into a wood shop.
Yeah. It's a physical product that you have that you can.
Yeah. Well, and what I love about it too is, you know, because of this relationship backstory, mm-hmm, and because I think that's important, and woodworking just being the modality, this gives us a lot of range to blow out other ideas,
mm-hmm,
you know, like, I don't know, painting kits or sculpting kits or whatever, you know, any of these,
yeah,
things
that, oh,
sort of,
yeah,
allow you to break away from technology.
Yep.
And even in like our whittling crowd, you know, we've had a lot of people talking to us. We've been doing a lot of surveying and things like that. And we recently were talking to just some parents who were really interested in just ways to get their kids off of their cell phones. You know, I mean, they're little kids now and everybody is on an iPhone or whatever.
Yep.
And, so one of the ideas we've come up with is putting together a kit for little kids that's basically a soap, you know, block and a plastic knife instead of.
I was going to say, yeah, give them a knife.
Block of wood and a real knife.
Yeah.
Get off the phone. Yeah. Here's a knife.
Well, that was the thing. You know, parents were asking me about this, and I've got a little trepidation around it, mailing knives,
right,
to, you know, 6-year-olds, right, or whatever.
Right.
And so, but that was one of the ideas that we came up with is maybe we send out blocks of soap.
Yeah,
and,
that's great.
You know, plastic knives.
Right.
They do the same sort of exercise, but they do it in a safe, right, way. There's also some, I mean, really interesting things that have emerged in our research too. Like, for example, there's a group of green woodworkers, and these guys are like hipster types, you know, late 20s to early 40s kind of people.
Yeah.
And all they want to do is carve wood that hasn't been kilned yet. So it's not completely dried out. It's still green.
Yeah.
And so, but I mean, we're in a Facebook group of 60,000 of them.
Wow.
You know, and it's like, who knew that that was even a
thing? But there's 60,000 people who like to whittle Greenwood.
It's awesome.
In just this one group.
Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. And yeah, and there's a million different aspects of this. Right. There's the wood carvers. There's the guys that do canes. There's the guys that do little figurines. There's the guys, you know, and there's whole subsections around each one of them. And so it's really been interesting to kind of learn all this about woodworking. Because, I mean, it's not like I've grown up doing woodwork or anything, you know. And so it's been kind of an interesting journey. So we're having a lot of fun with it. And like I said, hopefully we'll have it ready to go mid-October.
Yeah.
And how is that working with your wife? Is the communication and relationship there strong? Or do you find that you're learning more about each other and trying to communicate in different ways?
Well, it's interesting what it did to sort of our sort of normal operation. You know, we met each other in high school. We've been married since we were like 24, you know, now we're knocking on the door of 40, you know, so we've known each other a long time. We've been through a lot of these sort of ups and downs in business and all this stuff. And we've always sort of managed and worked to have totally separate lives. She was school teaching. I was always doing my thing. And we just, you know, our roads don't cross paths very often.
Right.
And so, and then just, we come home and meet in the middle. And then we have, you know, kids and family and stuff to sort of have that sort of central bond, I guess. Yeah. But what happened with this is we had this realization, like I had no idea how far removed she was from things that are pretty commonplace to me now. And so for her, she was stressing a lot because she was learning a lot of new stuff that she had no idea. You know, she's always been the person who bought the product, not the person who made the product.
Right.
So she didn't really understand all that goes into, you know, I mean, and really for most people, they probably don't realize how much thought and how much planning and how much everything else go into a product launch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she just had no idea. And so I felt much more comfortable in that space because these are people that I talk to all the time, whether I'm trying to sell them services or develop a relationship with them. And, you know, so for me, it wasn't that scary, but I didn't realize just how scary it was going to be for my wife or how difficult it was going to be for her, just because it's totally foreign land, you know, it's totally a different thing. So it did give us, so, I mean, it did lead to, you know, a few little skirmishes and things like that, mostly because she was stressed out and I was trying to say, hey, man, just relax, go with the flow. But,
which doesn't work when you tell someone to relax.
It never works. Nope. And so, so that was, you know, the worst of it was a little bit of that, but she's supremely organized. She's, you know, a great like taskmaster, put stuff on a to-do list, get things done kind of person. I am a super aloof creative and I'm all over the place all the time. And so, so we actually have really complementary skill sets that I think, you know, sort of helped us in this thing. And it's unfortunate she can't spend more time on it now.
Right.
Because I would like to launch this with her, you know, but we'll drag, our oldest boy is 12, so we'll drag him down and have him chopping wood blocks before long. And we'll try and turn it into a little bit of a family operation.
Yeah.
So, you know, which is cool and unique and different from basically every other operation I've ever delved into, which have always been sort of solo shows.
That's cool.
It'll be interesting to see how that comes out. So just looking into the future, Ryan, where do you kind of see you and your family? Where would you like to put yourself in the future, kind of things that you're going to be doing? Obviously doing the whittle work and more advertising and design, but is there something that you are looking at in the future that think I still want to go after this?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, there are a lot of things and it changes by the day. So this is a hard question to answer. You know, for somebody like me, I've got this laundry list of stuff and I spend all day, like, you know, each day is a new future for me. Mm-hmm. But largely, the idea is to continue to grow R2. So continue to build the agency, develop better high quality relationships with our clients that are meaningful and impactful. And, you know, by doing so, that becomes something that's really rewarding to me and to those that work with us. So that's kind of the goal on the R2 front. Although I do intend to be doing less of the work myself, start moving out and try and, you know, augment my position and the work that I do in the company with other people. With the express purpose of allowing me to have more time to work on other things like whittle and, you know, this other laundry list of things I've got. I'm also, you know, and you know, the reason we were interested in doing a podcast is, in addition to our show, you know, I'm trying to do more on sort of the personal branding front, things that are sort of related to just me as an individual. I'm doing a lot of writing and a lot of things like that lately. I anticipate doing more sort of content creation and developing a little bit of a probably consultative practice on top of all this stuff that will sort of be a big part of my future going forward and allow me the freedom to, you know, ultimately I'd like to be spending, you know, half my year maybe in Spain.
Yeah.
you know, and get to where I can do even, you know, I mean, my whole business was built remotely. So, I mean, we've built the whole company, you know, from the ground up to be able to work from anywhere on the planet. Right. So I can handle my work from Spain, and I'd like to get over there. Of course, I've probably got to wait until the kids get out of school or something, right, or off to college.
Right.
But that's okay. That'll give me a few building years, and we'll work on all that stuff. So there's sort of that three phase attack. There's the agency, there's personal branding, and then there's sort of any other projects I'm working on. So the podcast is one of those. And with our podcast, we're looking to, right now we're in the process of launching our podcast network. So we're going to start, launching several shows out of our studio, you know, some other things like that. So we're looking to sort of grow that presence as well. Mm-hmm. And then the personal branding stuff, the writing, and, you know, eventually we'll do a book or something else.
Amazing. You've done so many different things. I think a lot of our listeners are sitting there in a desk job, 9-to-5 desk job, or driving to and from work and thinking, gosh, I'd like to start something. I'd like to do something, but I'm not sure how. I don't know where to start. What advice would you give them?
Well, you know, this is a really interesting subject, and it's actually something we put kind of a lot of thought to, because, you know, for example, as I've, you know, I mean, I'm guilty of this, and so are probably many of your listeners, if that's sort of where they're at. You know, we get online and we watch the Gary V's or the Tony Robbins or the whomever, and we look for business advice and we try and learn whatever we can from them. And I'm having a really hard time articulating it or pinning it down, but there's some step in between that we're all missing. So we're hearing the advice, mm-hmm, but being able to act on it seems impossible. Yep. And, you know, I mean, they make it sound so easy, right? Oh, just produce 25 pieces of content a day.
That's
and,
easy.
You know, go out and start public speaking and blah, blah, blah. You know, of course, yeah, right? I mean, obviously, those are the things. But that the ability to actually take that step and move into it is really hard. And so, like, right now, at least in the podcasting sphere, we're developing our show is called Eggs. And so we're developing the Eggs Podcast Academy. And basically, it's kind of a educational program for this. And one of the things that I'm spending a lot of time, you know, studying up on and trying to explore is, how do we communicate these skills? How do we share these skills and actually allow people to do them? Because it is one thing to be told, but it's totally another thing to be able to move forward,
right,
and actually make
practical steps.
Well, and that was one of the struggles, you know, just to bring it back to, like, the Whittle experience and working with my wife on that stuff. I told her things that we should be doing. And so my inclination is, oh, well, she's a very capable woman. She could go out and do whatever. Yeah. She'll just do it. But then, you know, I would find that she was having trouble moving on it, which is very uncharacteristic for her because she's such a go-getter. But, you know, but that's what sort of made this start clicking with me, that I was like, okay, there's something, and I don't know what it is. It's an intangible something. I suspect it's probably based in fear or something, mm-hmm, like that. That it's really difficult to make those moves if you've never made them before. It's like you almost need someone, you know, to hop on their back and have them carry you through some
training wheels or something.
in order for you to understand it. And I was even talking to the guys that run this Tangible School, this e-commerce academy that I was going to with our Whittle product, because, you know, they're doing a lot of this stuff. They're trying to train people on how to launch e-commerce businesses. And I found that the sessions that I was at with them, where a person, you know, for example, they did a session on, like, pay-per-click marketing. And, you know, and we do this in our business. So, I mean, I understand this, but to sit down and do it for my own product is still different. And so, you know, they had whoever it was that came in and spoke that day. But that guy got online and everybody logged in on their computers and everybody did those couple things together. And we all walked through these steps together. And then, like, I was totally prepared to go do that for my business.
Yeah.
Where in other classes, I had people tell me their experience or explain to me what they'd done to make their business successful. And yet I could take almost no action against their advice. Right. And so we're working on that a lot. So it's really difficult for me to give advice on how to actually make stuff like that happen. Yeah. I think the biggest thing is, some of it, as much as we go out and we look for somebody to inspire us or whatever, it kind of has to come from within.
Mm. Yeah.
So we're all looking for cheat sheets and we're all looking for easier ways to, you know, do something. Oh, you know, I want to have a personal brand, yet I don't want to be on camera. Or I have, you know, like internally, there's some stuff that you have to fight through. And no matter how much Gary Vee yells at you, you're not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to make that step or feel comfortable on camera just because she's shouting at you. Like, you know, it's going to require a little bit of internal fortitude. So, you know, maybe it's not a very satisfying answer, but I think that largely it's finding that something in yourself and pushing through it and sort of going, you know, fighting against resistance. It's, You know, there's this guy, his name's Stephen Pressfield. He has this book called The War of Art, or The Art of War, War of Art. And he's got several books that are really good. But in that particular book, he talks a lot about this intangible, or this idea of resistance. And I think that that's a really clever way, or an interesting way, to sort of think about this, because you're holding yourself back. You're being held back by the expectations of others. You're being held back by whatever. But for some reason, you're running into this resistance. And so I think if you can sort of acknowledge that and understand that there is this resistance, but you can easily just sidestep it, you know, that might sort of help people to overcome that, because it really does come from within. And like I said, I mean, I'm not, even to this day, like, I'm not a wild risk taker. Most of this stuff, you know, even like the startup businesses and things that I start looking into, like, you know, I've never just quit a job and jumped off a cliff for an idea. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not that guy. Now, those guys exist, but I'm not that guy. And so, so for me, I've always baby stepped, and fortunately, I've not experienced a lot of damage either. Yeah. You know, like, I didn't give up everything for something and then lose everything, but I've probably not moved as quickly as I could if I had been a little bit more of a gambler.
Right.
And so I think, you know, there's that balance, and understanding that balance, but I think also just understanding that there is no magic bullet. There is no anything. You just actually have to go out and do something. Yeah. And, you know, like I said earlier about sort of not having a clear path, or being, you know, you're able to hear something but not convert it into something actionable. We kind of have to stop looking out to everybody else and stop and listen to our own gut. 'Cause usually we kind of know what the answer is. We just have to do it. And, you know, like, for example, with me in this personal branding experiment, you know, like, I mean, up to 2 years ago, remember, I'm Mr. Introvert. So this idea of putting myself out there and being on camera and writing and being on podcasts or whatever, like, this is a totally different world. Like, I'm not like the fame guy, you know? And so I'm not looking for that kind of attention. You know, I don't like to be the center of attention, generally speaking. And so, you know, so this is a challenge, but I recognize that if I'm supposed to develop my business, I'm supposed to have some sort of consultative life down the road. I'm supposed to take what was a freelance career and make it a business because my wife mandated it. Then, you know, I have to hulk up. I have to overcome what is my natural inclination and do it. And so, you know, and hopefully it's not that dire for everybody who's listening. You know, hopefully it's not, you know, down to, you've got to make this, you know, work or else. But sometimes that little added pressure, you know, whether it's something you can self-impose or whether it's put against something real, you know, is kind of what you need to be able to push forward.
The resistance. I love that. Dave and I were out for a walk this morning, and we were talking about, you know, we're interviewing the square ones, the ones who just don't seem to fit in that round peg.
The square pegs in the round hole.
The square pegs in the round hole. I still can't get that right. but I think you perfectly fit what that is. You know, you kind of challenge the status quo, you ask questions, you take action, and there's no particular formula. That's what we were saying. There's no formula for that kind of stuff. You just
kind of step into it, like you were saying, and figure it out. And
Well, and I imagine for some people, they, you know, maybe, you know, going down the straight path, you know, getting an education, like for my wife, for example, she's very A-type, very driven. Yeah. She went to school to become a teacher. She became a teacher, you know, like she went down a very linear path. Mine is like this insane meandering, you know, that eventually tends to manifest in, you know, us getting
so, hopefully.
So, but it requires all this weird stuff. Yeah. I mean, you know, it, basically I've come up with this phrase, and it's not very eloquent, but I have to tell myself this, you know, usually once or twice a day, that basically it took all the decisions I've made to this point to arrive at where I am at this moment. So, because a lot of times, especially if you get caught up with the YouTube crowd or whatever, and you're trying to keep up with the Gary V's or the Tony Robbins types, you know, you can sometimes end up putting yourself down or feeling bad about your state in life because it doesn't feel like you've accomplished anything. I mean, look at this guy. He's so successful, you know? And so I've had to resort to using this phrase, you know, like we had a woman on our podcast the other day. She's 26 years old. She's creative director, art director, you know, woman of many hats in the advertising and design business. But like in our conversation, she was sort of solving a lot of the life truths that I've just been working on in the last year or two. And immediately I was thinking, oh my God, like I should have solved all this stuff 20 years ago. Like I'm so behind the curve. Like, you know, I mean, what am I doing? I'm such a failure, all this stuff. And then, you know, I sort of think about this phrase and I go, okay, well, it took me every choice I've ever made to this point to arrive here to hear her story. Mm-hmm. And so there's no other way. There wasn't a shortcut. There wasn't a straight line. There wasn't anything. I had to do all this in order to meet her. And so, and by doing that, it gives me a little bit of solace and helps me not feel like I'm behind the curve or whatever. And that sort of seems to help.
helps you sleep at night.
That's the biggest thing, is trying not to compare ourselves to other people. It's so easy to compare.
Yeah, and it's tough, especially nowadays with social media and Instagram, where it appears that everyone you know is always in Hawaii. I don't know why, but everybody's always on vacation or they've all got yachts now. Like, I mean, it's the craziest world. I didn't realize people were so wealthy. But apparently, you know, people are. And so when you sit and you spend a lot of time in social media, you know, it's really easy to fall into those traps, especially as young people, you know, who don't necessarily understand the economics of owning that job and can, you know, sort of roll their eyes and recognize it's not
there. Right.
And eventually the truth will find you, right? There's so many people on Instagram influencers reading books on that and how it's a complete farce. It's like you're building this brand or business on a lie. And in the end, it's not worth.
Yeah. Well, it also.
Well, yeah. I mean, what's it for? You know,
exactly.
What end?
Exactly.
That's what we always ask. And what is your definition of success? Because if you're just chasing that and the money and the status, you're going to be let down and empty every time. That's why I love what you're talking about, building these relationships and putting your energy and effort into that, because that is where you'll find some of that fulfillment. And that to me is more success than any kind of yacht or status or.
Well, and you know, generally speaking, I mean, not always, but I mean, a lot of times, you know, the financial bit of success or whatever will come as a byproduct of building the relationships, right? I mean, you build these great quality relationships with people and then they want to work with you and then they want to do this and that, you know, so it does sort of, just a quick example, like right now I'm coaching my oldest son's football team. And we've got, you know, these 12-year-old kids and, you know, they're, I mean, hormonal. They just started seventh grade. They're all going crazy right now. And, you know, we are having a really hard time because, you know, we'll go in, we'll teach them these plays that are really complicated and they just can't execute. They can't figure it out. And so we've been spending a lot of time this season focusing on really fundamental stuff. You know, going back and just how do you block? How do you catch, you know, how do you catch a pass? How do you hand off something? You know, our plays have become very simple. You know, this is your route. Just run a straight line. Easy peasy. And, you know, by doing this, now all of a sudden our kids are performing at a much higher level, right? And then you can tack on little things and you can give them little tricks and stuff and help them evolve. But it all starts with this really basic fundamental thing. And for me, relationships are the core. They're the building block or the foundation that we build everything else on. And so in terms of finding success or finding everything else, you know, without the relationship component, there is nothing else. You know, if you don't have that cornerstone or that, you know, foundation to build on top of, well, you've just got a mess of, you know, bricks everywhere. You don't have something to actually build upon. And so, so to that idea of success or whatever, I mean, yeah, of course, it's very subjective. People want different things and that kind of deal. But I think largely, you know, focusing on relationships will allow you to eventually achieve that sort of financial well-being you're looking for. But even if you don't, the happiest people with the best relationships with no money are still the happiest.
Exactly.
Folks.
Yep.
I love that.
And so, yeah, so I think that's a pretty great
thing.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, it's been almost an hour. We really want to respect your time. We appreciate your time and all your thoughts going into all this. I think this will resonate definitely with us and hopefully with our listeners as well. So before we leave, is there a website, Instagram, Twitter, email that people can connect with you?
Yeah, if you don't mind if I give a couple of them.
Absolutely.
R2MG.com is the creative agency. You can find all my sort of reading, writing, all the stuff I'm working on in the personal brand space at just ryanrogar.com. That's ryanrogharr.com. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter. You know, I'm not very active, though. It's boring, so you don't have to spend a lot of time there. But it's just at Ryan Rogar. And our podcast is called Eggs the Podcast, and the website's just eggscast.com.
And what about the Whittle?
Whittle is just whittleit.com. Okay. So, and yeah, if you're interested in learning more about it or getting on our mailing list so that you can be notified as soon as it becomes available, which will hopefully be in the next month or so, just visit whittleit.com. There's a little form you fill out, just super easy, first name and an email address, and we'll be in touch. Cool.
I'll definitely be signing up for that.
Yeah, you would love that. Yeah.
Cool. I'll look forward to it.
Well, thanks again, Ryan. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Great. Of course. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Explore, dream, discover. That's what we're all about here, sharing people's stories and engaging with each other. We hope you found this conversation helpful and encouraging. Well, we'd love to keep in touch. We just created a Facebook group where you can connect on a more personal level. It's called the Square One Lounge. You can find it by going to our website, squareoneshow.com. Just look at the top and click on the lounge. Well, until next time, this is David and Jessica Lewis. Enjoy your week.